Okay, I'm calling the meeting of the Finance Administration Oversight Committee The agenda is before us. I would make one suggestion, and that is we have one action item that I think is very quick and easy to do. And we just take that one first, the elimination of the Metrobus Route N22. With that exception, or with that change, is there any objection to the agenda? To take action item B, elimination of Metrobus Route N22, and just do it first. Otherwise, we can do everything else. So if there is...
Mr. Chairman, I will move the elimination of Metrobus N22.
Well, we need to approve the agenda first. I just want to make sure that...
I move the agenda.
Okay.
Thank you.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. Now, Mr. Graham.
Thank you. I move the elimination of Metrobus Route N22. Let me just quickly say, this has been before us on various occasions, and it's been thoroughly discussed, and we have reached agreement in the district phone bill.
And this is to be taken over by the circulator, right? Any other comments? And it's been moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? This is approved. Let's go back to the minutes of February 12th. Are there additions, corrections, or modifications to the minutes?
I do want to make just one point, if I may, before we proceed. May I, Mr. Chairman?
Certainly.
Is that the elimination of the N22 and the previous elimination of the 98 does create a subsidy situation for the District of Columbia. There's approximately $1.3 million that the district has been paying in subsidy share this year and last year that, of course, we will not be paying in the next year. And there is $800,000 relating to the operation of the 98, which we fully funded in the District of Columbia, that those monies also will no longer be paid to the system.
If, thank you, sir. If there are no other comments on the minutes, can I have a motion to approve the minutes?
Move to approve.
And a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The minutes are approved. I did want to bring up one very quick item, and that is I don't remember that we ever talked about the equalization of the employer side subsidy that was included in the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act, which is very, very significant for transit throughout the nation. And that is, at the present time, up until that act, transit patrons were not allowed to get the same employer subsidy that people who were parking automobiles and driving were able to get. As a result of that act, those two were set at the same level. So now, people who ride Metro and transit systems throughout the country will be able to get a benefit of $230 per month from their employer, which is exactly the same as the benefit they could get if they were driving and getting a benefit for parking. I presume, Mr. General Manager, that this is something that we will be telling all of the people who are participating in our current program? Mm-hmm.
Yes, we will. In fact, we're putting together marketing piece on the issue. We know that it's going to help employers make the shift towards more public transit subsidies and meets the objectives of this agency and the public policy issue. Clean air and less congestion, but yes, we will.
And there's one other item which is coming up. I don't know that we've talked about it significantly publicly, but it is likely to have the same kind of impact that elimination of paper transfers did, and so it's something where we're going to have to educate both our riders and our employers, and that is a requirement by the IRS that the subsidy be different for parking and for transit. That is to say, now that you have both subsidies available to you, you will no longer be able to use the transit subsidy for parking in our parking lots and our garages. Is that correct?
That is true, and in fact.
Yeah. And that happens in December, is that right?
It's effective, yeah, with January 1.
January 1? I'm sorry, I knew we were going to say.
That we are in the process of modifying our systems and also notifications to employers about that responsibility. Our system will be able to break that out for our customers, but ultimately, the employer and the individual has the responsibility to report that to the Internal Revenue Service.
Well, and it means that people are going to have to ask their employer to split up their benefit between the parking benefit and the transit benefit in accordance to how they use it. Is that right?
That is true.
Okay, so a lot of people are going to need to learn about this. We probably are going to need the help of the press and probably a campaign of our own to make sure that come January, people don't suddenly discover that they can't get out of the garage because they don't have money in the correct benefit. Did you want to say something else, Jordan?
I think I'll just dig us more in a hole if I did, so I'll just leave it as it is, because that's something that is, that many of us have known for years should, in fact, been the case. But I'll leave that where it is.
Okay, if we can then move ahead with information items. The first one is the organizational and management initiatives. Mr. Cato.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If we get this up on the screen. Today we're taking you on a very tough task of looking at the FY10 budget. I just wanted to go back in time and give the board an update of actions that we've taken since FY08. In FY08, we reduced the budget by $35 million by eliminating 254 positions, as well as reducing contractual services of $5 million, fuel savings, and health care savings, for a total reduction of $35 million. In FY09, we put a hiring freeze in effect, anticipating more revenues or the abilities of the jurisdictions to give us increased funding because of the financial situation that's impacting the nation and the world. And so we put a hiring freeze in effect for all non-critical positions. We eliminated 80 positions that were over 180 days old, and we also reduced travel materials and supplies, and we forecast there would be a $9 million reduction in the 09 budget as a result. For FY10, we've proposed thus far $81 million in reductions, reductions of over 300 positions, and cutting department budgets by 10%. And taking a look at operations, work began in March of 2008 to look at an organizational assessment of operations. The work was completed in December of last year, and the three major results are that bus transportation is being reorganized, and that's underway today. Basically, we're taking five positions at different levels of management and consolidating them into one position, eliminating some levels of management, some duplication, and more clearly defining the job of the operations service managers. We're also looking at, we evaluated labor productivity, and we plan to use the evaluation and the information that we obtain to improve the automated scheduling process during FY10, again, hopefully to gain additional efficiencies. We've made improvements to emergency communications. Some of the recommendations have been implemented, but we need to continue with additional improvements in that area. The reorganization of bus, as I mentioned, resulted in work from the bus reorganization task force, which was made up of a cross-section of people from operations, planning, and workforce services. The team designed the new organization, identified new management responsibilities, and developed training that's underway today and helping with the transaction and this reorganization. One of the aspects of it, again, the reorganization eliminated five levels of management, and frontline managers will now have a team of bus operators reporting directly to them, and they will have the ownership for routes and also lines of buses. And I had the opportunity to attend one of those training sessions yesterday, and in my judgment, the people chosen and the information being taught is going to be very helpful as we move forward to the future. Under the Metro Access, we've made some changes that the eligibility process which were previously performed by a contractor, will now be performed by our staff, taking positions that we had in the budget and reallocating them. And the new eligibility office will be located in the lobby of this building. And we think we can save and avoid costs of over $3.5 million by that action. We realigned the training responsibility within operations with a central office responsibility, and have focused training resulted in cost savings of $1.9 million and how we scheduled that training, as well as the length of the training itself. Labor productivity is a measurement, again, of the actual time an operator is productive, is a percentage of the total time they are paid. We are evaluating that, as I mentioned earlier. We plan to move forward with changes in how we schedule our services as we go through the remainder of this year, as well as into FY10. Next page. Something we've talked about over the past 2 years is tightening the controls on overtime. And over the for the first time in recent memory, for two consecutive months, overtime has been under budget, with the exception, of course, of the inauguration in the area of rail. But other than that, even the bus operations and other segments of the organization, overtime has been reduced. In fact, non-scheduled overtime was reduced by 21% from calendar year 07 to 08, and 5% for all total overtime. And as part of the budget recommendation for FY10, we recommend additional reductions. From an IT and planning initiatives, again, we have completed a department reorganization in IT, which will make that group more responsive and effective. We've enhanced the agency's payroll support system, which allowed us to do our payroll functions with six fewer positions. The time and labor system was recently re-engineered to permit employees time and attendance entries and subsequent supervisor verification, which gives us more control on expenditures and when overtime is assigned. From a planning and joint development standpoint, scheduling is currently under the control of planning and joint development, and we're looking at options to move that from that area to other areas so they can focus more on the planning and the real estate and joint development aspect of the organization. The safety department was reorganized, which to create a direct link to revenue services by creating safety responsibility to each operations area. Basically, every supervisor, every manager has the responsibility of safety. From financial initiatives, the Department of Financial Services is comprised of the following groups: the Accounting Department, Treasury, Procurement, and the Office of Management and Budget. We're continuing to focus on issues such as tax, leases, pensions, and trusts. And we also have redefined the role of risk management, have moved that from safety to finance, with the focus on reducing our costs from work-related injuries and other incidents and exposures that the agency had. The Metro Transit Police, as a result of their reorganization in early 2008, result of the findings of the NTI project, the responsibility of emergency management was transferred to the police department, and also we established a new Bureau of Special Operations to apply special focus, a particular focus, on special events and specific crimes such as robbery and auto theft. And Mr. Chairman and members of the board, again, we've taken many steps to reorganize and improve the efficiency of the agency. There's many more that we will take, and I just wanted to give you that lead in to our presentation again on the focus for the FY10 budget.
Thank you, Mr. Cato. Are there any comments, questions on the presentation? Yes, Mr. Zimmerman.
You just described, sometime back, I guess it was close to 2 years ago, ago, you had an item requesting us to authorize a contract with an outside consultant. Here you mentioned that.
Yes.
Did much of this come out of that work?
The overwhelming majority of this came out of the work that was done 2 years ago by Martha and Associates to take a look at the organization.
So basically, this is about the results of having implemented a lot of those recommendations.
Yes.
You note in here that there are 250 some positions were eliminated as part of the refocusing.
Yes.
Are there any other summary ways of looking? I mean, this is across the organization, very disparate as the organization, but apart from the reduction of positions, there are quantifiable budgetary impacts.
Yes, in 08, $35 million was reduced out of the budget. And so that really carries on year after year of $35 million we're not exposed to. In FY09, we've forecast an additional $9 million based upon actions that we've already taken, anticipating that we're going to have a very difficult challenge for FY10. Because if we start reducing those expenses today, then that's less expenses we have to cover next year and future years.
So the point is, over the preceding two fiscal years, you have been making, you've been eliminating a lot of administrative positions, yeah, making adjustments for efficiencies, which are harder to quantify, but you can account for somewhere in excess of $40 million.
Yes.
We're spending less in budget as a result of those actions.
Yes, that's true. Over $44 million.
Thank you.
Any other comments?
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. McKay.
Two questions. First, on the bus, the new way we handle buses, it mentions the new structure began in Virginia on November 1 of 08, mm-hmm, and this eliminated five levels of management, which, you know, is a very good thing. But my question is from a customer standpoint, since that was rolled out November 1, is there a service difference? Is there an impact on service? Have we looked at what's happened since November 1 on the ground to be able to quantify whether or not that was a positive change?
Yes, and we do have some. We wanted to come back to you and give you that specific report of what happened with our tests in Virginia and why we're going to move ahead and implement it in the District of Columbia as well as in Maryland. And I'd like to bring that back, if I could, to your next meeting.
That's fine. And a second, easier question on the finance initiatives. It mentions that in this month, risk and claims management will be transferred to the Department of Safety to Treasury for the responsibility of developing risk protection solutions to offset the increase in expenses. If I read that correctly, Treasury will be responsible for developing risk protection solutions. Is that correct? And I guess what is the rationale behind that? Because it kind of goes against conventional wisdom of what these agencies would be doing. And how does that generate savings?
Well, actually, common in the industry is to have risk management looked at as an enterprise type of area. So looking at each particular risk that you have, whether it's finance, whether it's an operational risk, and how you can mitigate that by using financial applications. And that's really the main reason why the risk portion of that is being put into Treasury. So insurance, we have insurance now where you have self-insurance under liability and property, a $5 million deduction. How we can look to minimize that, how we can look to minimize our claim actions. As you know, our claim incidents have gone down, but our costs have gone up. So looking at ways to mitigate that just from a financial point of view. So those are the types of things that a Treasury or a financial function can do, and that's why we actually moved it into that area.
And if I may, the responsibility for the safety and the safety committees and to avoid accidents remain within the safety department. Mm-hmm. Only the administration of claims and liability claims will move to the Treasury Department.
Okay, that clarification helps a lot, because that's not really exactly how it reads. It almost sounds like all the responsibilities are being transferred to Treasury, and I think that clarification is important. So our Department of Safety will still play a major role in this process. So I just want to make that clear.
And both groups are going to work hand in hand so that they can understand that.
Okay, thank you.
Anybody else?
I just wanted to go back to the one on the safety and ask,
talked about the reorganization that's taken place, but I didn't hear your comment on the agreement that you were working with in terms of the cost reductions by realigning and a greater emphasis on FAPE.
There is, my mind isn't working well this morning. I have to apologize.
It's okay. We all probably have been taxed. but just the clarity. I thought you had a contract with, and I've lost the name of the DuPont.
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
DuPont.
I understand the question. The responsibility for the DuPont contract still remains in the administration of that within the safety department, because that focuses on specific actions we can take to reduce exposure to claims by good work habits. And so that remains in safety. What's the only aspect that moved when you looked at who pays the claim and how we administer those claims from a financial standpoint, that's the piece that moved to finance. And but all of the safety is
And did safety. Did you quantify any savings that you were able to identify by the new contract? Work with the new contract.
We do have those numbers. I have those numbers off the top of my head.
Okay.
We can bring those. We do have
those. I think
those
it's
numbers.
Important.
Okay. Anybody else?
I have a question.
Oh. Certainly.
Maybe this has happened, but I requested two things through this process. One was the impact on various efficiencies of this cut, efficiencies in service and so on. And I see that that has been provided, and I appreciate that. But the second was an examination of the upper level staff and the justifications for additions to the staff at that level and immediately below it. And maybe I got it, but I don't think I did.
We did. I thought we sent that out. We
if
did send that out.
Could I see another copy of it?
Yes, we'll get you another copy.
There's been so much paper coming.
It's been a lot of paper sent, a lot of requests.
I'd just like to see it and focus in on it. Thank you.
If there are no more questions.
Can I get a copy now?
Yes, we're getting.
If there are no more questions on this item, I would like to beg the indulgence of the committee. It's been brought to my attention that an item has been left off the agenda. It's an item that takes less than a minute. So if you don't mind, I'd like to just insert that here, and then we can get down to the main business of this committee. We have a committee on audit, a subcommittee on audits, investigation, and oversight, which has been operating most of last year. And under our new board procedures, it's required for this committee to appoint the members of that committee. I'd like to reappoint the people who've been on it, who have done an excellent job, Mr. Yule, Mr. Giancola, and myself, and ask that Mr. Giancola accept the position of chair of that committee. Is there any objection to doing so? Without objection, we move forward into our item 3B.
The budget. Let me take you through actually the first chart, which is actually just kind of level setting where we are to date based upon the meetings that we've had over the last several weeks, and then hand it over to the general manager to talk about some of the subsequent issues regarding operational impacts and strategy moving forward. Currently, as you know, we actually started at a baseline subsidy, and we had a budget gap of $154 million. The work that this committee has done, as well as staff, has brought it down to a $73 million level, given the $81 million reductions that we're taking and have taken. Some of those reductions are a result of positions that have been eliminated on February 17th, where we've had a layoff, as well as vacancy eliminations, overtime management that we will be implementing for next year, and also including other management actions, including types of cost control initiatives that we've actually put in place to date. That brings us to the $81 million. In addition, this committee has discussed at several Thursday meetings the ability to close the gap in an additional manner, which has resulted in a $44 million reduction. This includes things, to go to the next page actually, which are things like fiber optics, which is the $1.2 million, We feel that there's a very high probability that we actually will gain that revenue. We also included a $4 million savings on deferring the retiree health costs, but the committee had agreed to include a $1 million funding on setting up the trust in order to progress and demonstrate that we actually had the ability to set that up. We had a $5 million reduction that the committee discussed in terms of purchased materials, purchased services, excuse me, and consulting. And as a result of that, we'll have some less consulting, but we feel that we can absorb that reduction. In addition, the committee discussed $10 million of additional preventative maintenance expenses, which would move those $10 million from capital to the preventative maintenance line item. We also talked about an additional $5 million in paper transfer, which to date I have indicated I don't have any trend data on, but I will have more information on that in April, which is next month's meeting, and I will bring that to the committee. I will have now a quarter worth of data, 3 months of data, so we can measure the risk of that at that time. We also had an additional $7 million in terms of pension adjustments that we spoke about, and then an additional $12 million in current wage settlements that we took, given that we still have open agreements and discussions on arbitration on that. We've got that as a placeholder. That actually brings us down to the reduction that we are now at $29 million as an operating gap. And
I think if, let's go back. This one page. I'm sorry. We'll go forward. One of the things I wish to make clear on the financial impact of the $44 million reduction. Everybody show that page again. Thank you. The $7 million of pension funding adjustments, those monies are not going away. Basically, it's like you're taking a house that has a 10-year mortgage left on it, and you're extending that mortgage to 25 years. Mm-hmm. So that expense will occur. It's being stretched out over a longer period of time, but doesn't go away. And again, we're assuming that we're able to do it. On the wage settlements, again, that's depending upon the outcome of arbitration. Next, I'd like to take you through the $81 million and the impacts of what we're doing here. We've mentioned a $20 million reduction in overtime. That will result in fewer personnel than what we have used in the past to help us manage the flow of customers doing special events. Now, I'm not speaking of an event like the inauguration, that's unusual. I'm speaking of events like games at the Nationals park, baseball park. At times we had a very large number of people. We believe we can operate that with fewer people, but it will impact that and other events going through the year. It will add some to the backlog for maintenance projects, not significant enough to really impact our service to any great degree, but when you're reducing personnel of 300 or not hiring people, things you were planning to do, you won't do. We will reduce the frequency of walkthroughs, the train cars themselves, to pick up newspapers, particularly during the peak periods that are left in the trains. So we will have a big campaign again, asking our customers to take their newspapers with them to help mitigate what we expect to be, you know, additional newspapers are being left on the Metro Rail system. They will be clean, but it just won't happen as often. And so we're going to have to press much harder for our employees to remove their newspapers. Again, we have a few cleaners. As I mentioned, there would be newspapers on trains. These are not cleaners that clean the stations themselves, but who take the trash out of the trains. From a Metro bus standpoint, as I mentioned earlier, we restructured. Our intent was to assign 20 employees for supervisors, and now we're going to assign 25 employees to supervisors, which is a 25% increase in their workload. As a result, again, of reduction of overtime, in some locations, it's been clear as we look through the trends that there were times we held over too many people in order to cover when there is an absence of an operator due to illness or other reasons, or an accident or some other event on the system. We've reduced those numbers significantly to get the overtime done, and when you do that, you might miss an occasional trip. When I said occasional, right now we operate over 99.3 or 4% of our services. You might have, it's instead of 99.4, it might be 99.356. So it's not significant, but it will have an impact. The other impacts, there's a long wait time today on our customer service center, and again, because we're not going to be working as much overtime in certain times of the weekend and peak periods, there might be a longer response, as well as inquiries into issues, because we reduce the staff that respond back to those issues. Less professional development, less training for administrative employees, because we reduced that budget significantly. The customer research, right now we're going to suspend part of the Mystery Rider program, and we've reduced and cut back significantly on the Metro customer research and advertising. So those are some of the impacts that we have as a result of the $81 million reduction that we're taking in the budget that we recommend. And I just want to let you know it didn't come clean. There were impacts as a result of that. We've already laid off over 40 employees, and it's a total of 100 positions that we had individuals in. The remaining of them will be leaving the agency over the next 30 to 45 days. A question came up, what would be the impact if we were to divert capital funding for maintenance, preventative maintenance, for the $29 million, if we use federal funds to cover that gap, so to speak. The impact of the would be for plans that we brought to the board before, it would reduce the number of older vehicles being replaced. We originally requested over $12 million to replace older buses. This would reduce that amount by 50%. It would reduce the number of heavy-duty track equipment or replacement of track equipment that we originally had planned under the stimulus package, as well as $2 million in bus replacement components, such as major components for our vehicles that we were going to buy under this program. It would eliminate a 60-ton crane that we were planning on buying for track work. It would just shift that back to a later date. Some power tools we would not replace is about $2 million, and it would reduce vehicles that we have planned on replacing as under the Metro Access fleet. The plan was to expand that as well as replace all of the vehicles, and instead we're reducing the number of vehicles we're going to replace. And we will eliminate some replacements of service vehicles. That would be the impact if we were to divert $29 million of stimulus funding to close the gap.
Mr. Cato?
Yes.
Mr. McKay has got a question, and Mr. Graham has got a question.
It may be answered on the next slide. I may be getting ahead of myself, but you've given the capital budget impact amount here, but obviously there's a larger impact of not replacing old fleet vehicles in terms of maintenance costs. Is that captured on the next slide? Am I getting ahead
of
you?
No, we did not break down the what that would cost. We had a plan to replace all of our vehicles under Metro Matters. And in fact, that plan has moved ahead, and we have 200 and some odd vehicles coming in this year. But the cost of the vehicles increase, because we're using hybrid technology. Mm-hmm. And as a result, we could not buy any additional vehicles beyond, we couldn't buy the total number that was planned on the Metro Matters. So we were going to use the stimulus package to help close that gap, and we still will, but we just won't use as much. So it will have some impacts. We've not calculated that out. We saw this as an opportunity to get the age of our fleet down, which does impact preventative maintenance costs.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Graham, did you have a question?
Yeah, I need to go back a couple of slides. I want to come to that, but I need to go back a couple of slides to when you're not picking up newspapers.
Excuse me, which one?
It's 23.
Next.
The next page, yeah. This one here?
Next one.
Next one, there it is, right
this
there.
One. This one. I mean, I just want to say that, you know, we're now talking about putting out a proposal for public comment.
Yeah.
And that gives us time to gather some information also. And I'd like to see a price tag attached to these things, because I want to know just how significant a cost savings each of these represents. Because left the way it is, this may be something that we can figure out something to do with. For example, I have been mentioning several times the Council of the District of Columbia has funded a city year, you know, the organization city year to work with Metro. And I'm still not convinced that we're very effectively utilizing this. And I thought we were going to have them as the consumer research and the mystery writers and everything else. And these folks are waiting to work. And I'm just not sure that, you know, we've sent them passes and so forth, but they're willing to volunteer within the system. If we could just take some time in developing. It's a minor point, but much of this are minor points, and I just want to, I want to see some price tags associated with infrequent newspaper pickup and so forth.
Okay.
But let me move on to the more substantial issue.
Can you stop for a second, because Mr. Linton wanted to comment on that.
He wants to comment?
Yeah. Go ahead.
Only question I raise, I know that, you know, from my years working in transit agencies, that sometimes this is there are union rules in terms of when you, in fact, lay off employees.
Well, then that's an issue.
And
that's
cut
an
employees. Issue,
yeah. I mean, I just wanted to see some kind of analysis of this. I just didn't want it left up there without some further analysis.
Mr. Graham, you want to continue?
The $29 million, though, that we are contemplating today, the final gap closing, which is on slide 24. And I have the advantage that which some of you may not have of having had our oversight hearing of Metro WMATA in my committee at the council. Was that yesterday or the day before?
It was the day before.
The day before. And so we went over a lot of these issues at that time. And we saw we had questions and answers on the Metro's plan for using the $200+ million in the stimulus package. And I'm a little bit concerned about, you know, putting out these individual items, because my recollection is that there is a total of $200 million available for some of this. And some of this is not going to be entirely eliminated as a result of the $29
million.
That's true. There are going to be other funds in virtually every one of these categories that will do some of this work. Am I right?
Yes, and that's what I communicated in the presentation.
But the way in which this is, you know, someone who just arrived and took this sheet would think that the $29 million, the lack of availability of $29 million would mean that we're not replacing any old buses, for example. You understand what I'm saying? And I think that, you know, we haven't determined yet how we're going to spend the $200 million in stimulus. Am I right?
The board did give me basic directions on it.
But these issues are coming before the board for decision, are they not? Are you not going to present a spending plan for the $200 million?
We will be bringing the proposals to procure different items to begin construction projects to the board over the next meeting, when we have to go out and award a contract. But the board did give me some authority to begin a process of at least determining costs and getting bids in to take care of the highest priority capital needs that we have. And we did present to the board a global list of what they were.
Right, and I recognize that. But on the other hand, if we were today to use $29 million of the federal stimulus dollars, when the purposes that we've been discussing, we would have a determination of what that, how specifically that $29 million would impact the $200 million worth of spending under the federal stimulus, right? We would have that discussion.
Yes, that's what this...
Right, okay.
Okay, yes.
But do you understand what I'm saying? I mean, to my knowledge, we have no, number one, we have no decision on the $29 million being closed by federal stimulus dollars. We don't have that decision yet. But assuming that decision occurs, we would then have to figure out just how we were going to have that impact, the $200 million worth of federal, overall $200 million worth of federal stimulus funding. Am I right?
I'm not sure.
Mr. Graham, if I may, I do believe we have already given the general manager substantial authority to make those decisions, because it did come both to this committee and to the board, in which there was a list and priorities. You know, he said these are the areas where I'm going to work, and he asked for the ability to move forward on those items because of the exigencies of time associated with carrying out this program. So
I appreciate that, but the other day I asked him this question at our oversight hearing, and you indicated to me that the actual spending plan for the $200 million would come before the board.
We would bring to the board the actual spending plan, but the board gave me the authority to do, yes.
But assuming that, okay, well, let me put that issue to one side, because the other issue is more relevant to me right now. Assuming that you have been given that guidance, which I think you have substantially, we would have to revisit this in terms of the $29 million, to the extent to which there's $29 million diverted to this purpose, because we have to figure out, you know, where are we not going to spend $29 million in terms of the stimulus spending. Am I right?
Yes, and I guess this should be worded. These are my recommendations of where we do not spend the money.
But let me note, at the time that we approved a substantially larger number than the $200 million. But we also gave a great deal of authority for the general manager to move ahead even at lower levels. We have a number of other people who want to make comments, starting with Mr. Linton, and then Mr. McKay, and then Mr. Giampola, and then Mr. Zimmerman.
My understanding of the stimulus proposal, and I know that not just Metro, but most of the transit boards have been doing the exact same thing, is that the board of directors have passed a recommended list of projects. Those projects have to be submitted to the Metropolitan Planning Organization to be put in their STIPs for funding. And those fundings have to be constrained by finances as required by federal law. So we, in fact, have done that. We've submitted that list, and you have to both submit the list, and the list has to be financially constrained, which means that you must demonstrate you have the financial capacity to pay for the items that you put in the TIP. So we, in fact, have done that. Now, when you, in fact, change that, it requires you to, one, remove items from that TIP, make other recommendations, and I would imagine this is in fact a recommendation that would cover potentially, if the board was deciding to move in that direction, $29 million. So the general manager is in fact is saying this is what the potential impact would be, and based upon the priorities of our capital budget, this is where I think we could best do this with the least amount of impact. Now, I'm thinking that's, you know, I can't put words in your mouth, but just my intuitive right thinking of how this process works, that's what I think you're presenting. Ultimately, the board can recognize that I think we would give the general manager the ability to manage the property and based upon where the priorities are to keep our system operating in that regard. So I think that's where we are, and he's kind of saying that this is what the impact will be, which is what we asked for.
Mr. McKay.
I just wanted clarification. Can you remind us the dollar value of the original stimulus list, wish list that we had versus what our anticipated funding amount is?
That was almost 500.
It was 534. Go ahead. Well, the original list is 534, and we kept revising the list based upon the information we received.
Right. So our original wish list was 534, and our anticipated funding amount is how much?
201. We revised it several times down. We went to 325 based upon one understanding of the House bill. We came back to you with a list of about 240 based upon our estimates. We got a final number from FTA, and we're down at about a $200 million program today.
So we're already, as we start, down more than half the amount that we had originally hoped to get through the stimulus package.
That's correct. It's down substantially.
Thank you.
Mr. Giancola.
Yeah, I'm taking a little bit of having difficulty with the way this was presented today. First of all, you used the word wish list, and remember, stimulus was something we never really expected. So this is all new money that we wouldn't have to, it would help us. So, I mean, it's, the way I would prefer this to be presented was, what are the monies being funded? And then, of course, what we suggest in the impact of reaching that $29 million number. So, you know, to me, the stimulus package is new money to apply to our deficiencies, and I think we should remember that. It's not something that we always counted on. And, I have an opportunity to see the Los Angeles County wish list, and believe me, they had a much more than a half cut in their list. They were in the 25 to the $30 billion request, and I think they eventually got significantly less than that, and certainly significantly less than half. So I think we got to remember that perspective here. This was new money to help us with our deficiencies. So the presentation here is good, but I think it would be nice to know what we were planning to do, what we were planning to spend on the older buses, and then obviously we're going to cut back and what that number would be as suggested by Mr. Graham, a little more detail on the specifics here. So in other words, the glass is half full here, not half empty.
Yeah.
Okay?
And if I may, Mr. Chairman, we are having copies made of the original list for the 201 and what the impacts would be if you reduced it. So that is coming out. We'll pass that out to you.
Okay. Mr. Zimmerman?
Well, I'm up.
You're up.
All right. Again, so what I hope is a simple question. To go back to the last question, again, just to clarify, though, what I think I heard you say, this is your list of, based on prioritization, which you previously discussed with us, we submitted the plans to DPB, and it's worth noting that as of this moment, WMATA is the only agency in the region that has a plan that is already approved by the regional MPO, the Transportation Planning Board, for expenditure of stimulus dollars. We were the only ones that were ready to go. It was approved by TPB, and so we're out ahead of everybody else getting ready to actually make funds from the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act, or whatever it's called. Go to work. But that's based on a prioritization. I think Mr. McKay just walked through. We had a list of $500 million, got it down to $230 million, now I think we're getting around $200 million, and you get that list.
Yes.
And what you're telling us is, as you cut at the bottom, here's what's at the bottom of the list. Because the things that otherwise are higher on, would still be funded are the things that you think are the highest priority. Basically, you start with the thing that you most need to do and work your way down. All this needs to be done. There's $500 million worth of stuff we ought to be doing, but we've already reduced the capital budget. So replacement of oldest buses, I assume, is the thing that just falls off the list on that.
Partially, we had $12 million set aside. We reduced it to six.
Yeah, it's not all the replacement
buses, all,
but
yes.
The marginal bus here.
Right.
So we would have basically half the bus. Remind me again, how many buses were we going to buy replacement?
Well, I think I have to do the math here. I don't recall the number. He's getting the list for me. Yes, he's making a copy of it, so we would know what that number is.
I guess I want to know how many of those flexibles I'm still going to have to watch on the street. I was looking forward to getting rid of them. But now, it seems to me that the question here is not whether we use the stimulus dollars or not and whether that's okay. I think I heard the question. That's really not what it's about. It seems to me what it's about is whether we move money from capital to operating.
That's right.
And that's really what it is.
Yeah.
What are we doing through the capital budget? Now, we may have kind of forgot about this because we're focused on the operating budget, but when the budget, which we have a unified budget at the full, what is it, 1.9 altogether with capital and operating together? The capital budget for this year, well, the capital budget for the current fiscal year that we're in was around 600, was it?
600 Million.
And the proposed budget, the front end of all this, for the capital program for the coming fiscal year is?
That's concerning the neighborhood.
I think it's around 400 million, but we haven't closed that yet.
I was thinking it was 450 or something like that.
And we haven't brought it to the committee yet.
You'll find the exact magnitude. But the main point is, the general manager has already, in view of the fiscal situation we're in, proposed a substantial reduction in our capital budget. Is that a fair statement, Mr. Pato?
Yes.
This is not because you think we don't need as much capital money.
No, that is true.
In fact, if we had a lot more money, I'm guessing you would be proposing a pretty substantial increase in our capital expenditures.
Yes. I didn't know if that was a question or what. Yeah.
Good witness.
It's so obvious. In fact, what we showed years ago was that a lot of the reason for problems on Metro was underinvestment of capital dollars over many years. I remember that years ago, some of the early estimates were done said, you know, roughly speaking, you should have about 3% a year going in to maintain a capital stock because, you know, average life around 20 years, compounding and all that. And Metro was basically putting in something like 1%. This is all before Metro Matters and everything. And as a result of actions, including a particular Metro Matters, we cranked that up. And I think we got somewhere around 2%. But we were still really short. And that's why we've been going all over the place saying we need dedicated funding. Now, we, with Metro Matters, because we got no help, basically, the governments that participate in this essentially threw in as much as they could to get through a period of time in which we would be facing a real problem. And so we kind of, you know, put in every last bit that the state and locals could come up with, including some of which was kind of betting on, you know, things being better in the future, which we're about to run out of. And there, that's why it's cranking down all of a sudden now. Not that we don't need that and more, but we're being forced now to crank it down because nothing's come about to change that situation. So the question for me is, in a situation in which we have historically been underfunding capital, but we did much better over the past decade, we're now looking to go back to where we were, say, in the 90s, which led to all the kinds of problems we had, beginning with the cherry blossom meltdown and other things people have forgotten about now, but they remember only the most recent disaster. But whether it's doors or escalators or any of those things, we're actually looking at the prospect of getting going back in that direction. Mm-hmm. And in this budget, we've already shifted some capital to operating. And now we're asking ourselves, well, should we put in another $30 million? I think that's really the question before us. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, you could always say, well, maybe we wouldn't do exactly these things on the list. Maybe we get the manager to change some of it. We want to buy a few more buses. But then, of course, we'll be taking something off the list that's above this. We haven't talked about that. There's a reason why he's saying that's a higher priority. But any of it is going to affect the quality of service. To me, that's what underlies this whole exercise. We're not trying to close a $29 million budget gap. We're trying to close a $154 million budget gap. And for the past 6 or 8 weeks, whatever it is, we've been getting more, you know, different proposals coming forward, and that number has, in a sense, gone down as means have been identified to close the gap, and we've all sort of been nodding our heads, although we haven't actually voted on any of it. But to think that the previous $120 million or whatever it is has been kind of an easy, painless thing, won't, you know, it won't hurt a bit, would be foolish. It seems to me that all the stuff in here falls into three categories. Changes that it can be called administrative, say something with that. Changes that I would describe as re-estimates or anticipations, and changes that are really deferrals. The administrative actions are ones that aren't direct service. They're not cutting somebody's bus route or changing the times of the rail service, but they all actually do affect service because that's what they do in this building. You know, and if you eliminate administrative people, at some point you're going to be affecting service. Now, in the earlier discussion, we heard the general manager say that over the past 2 years, through all the actions he's taken, he's already eliminated well over 250 positions from the organization, implemented all kinds of reorganization, everything from bus service to the police force to paratransit, to try and get every bit of efficiency. That should tell us there's not a lot of easy stuff out there, which is why we get the list that he went through at some point there, showing the various kinds of impacts that these administrative changes are likely to have. And guess what? They make service lousier because that's what happens when you reduce the capacity of the organization. And I was trying to figure out exactly, I mean, we've got at least 80, maybe $90 million or so in this is these administrative changes. They are going to affect the quality of the service that our customers receive. The balance of it is this re-estimates, re-anticipations, and deferrals. The re-estimates are basically where we just say, well, we think we can do a little better at this. We think that we were a little too conservative before, and that might be the case. But of course, once you start over one item after another, betting on the optimistic side, you're running a risk. So I think I figure there's at least $18 million or so of that stuff in here. Somebody may want to go through and count it themselves. And that's all at risk. The other part is deferrals. And I count at least $21 million of deferral, which is to say that we're taking something out that we're going to have to come back and do something about next year. The key part about moving capital dollars over and using the stimulus money to plug that is that 12 months from now, we have to do this again. And we don't know that the federal government's going to come back and hand us that money again. There's no particular reason to expect that's going to be the case. And we have a whole set of things now in what is this proposal to close our budget gap that basically say, let's hope it's a better year next year. But you still have to come up with that. Even if it is a better year next year and you don't have a deeper hole, you're going to have to replace what you did this year. So I guess that's the question for us. You know, do we want to call it a day, do this, and say we solved the problem? If so, what do we think we're looking at when the general manager comes in December and says, here's what the budget looks like for next year? This is not that far down the road.
Mr. Zimmerman, I think you've asked the question, which is, what does it say on the next two pages of this presentation? So why don't we do those? And then we'll go back to discussion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The strategies for 2011 is to continue the refinement of the bus system. And I mean, looking at routes that certain segments might not be productive, the headways between routes, and which might require possible mid-year public hearings. We're still going through those analyses. And this would occur no matter what action we take. Continual cost restructuring, again, to attain state, based upon performance measures. And we're developing performance measures for all of our groups as far as overtime, percentage, productivity, again, to force people to stay within the budget itself and make it clear to them what the expectations are. The strategy is, at some point, based upon current board policy, to develop some fare increases potentials for 2011. It does not mean we will have a fare increase, but it's my job to look at, based upon what I think the shortfall is going to be, to look at different revenue options. To utilize, if possible, utilization of a low-cost financing component under the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act for capital, basically, that act has a provision that reduces significantly the cost of being able to bond or borrow monies for capital programs. Again, I'm not saying we would do it, but that's a possibility. If we have savings in the budget because of these strategies, to look at restoring the capital preventative maintenance dollars back into the capital account. And again, the strategy is, I'm assuming, little or no subsidy increases from the jurisdictions, and that the economy have not recovered significantly enough to do that. Based upon those criteria we looked at, what do we think the budget gap might be for 2011? And again, when we look at this, this is absolutely a ballpark. We've not been able to go into the details. We don't even know what the 2010 budget is going to be yet. And so this is really a guesstimate based upon what occurred this year, based upon inflation, based upon a whole host of issues. And what if, you know, from the labor standpoint, we assume that, you know, the arbitration will be a midway impact that, you know, basically what the agency have requested we would get. You still have the step increases under the labor agreements, pension increases, health increases, and other benefits. It assumes a 20% ridership growth in paratransit, so that's the assumption here. And we also assume that other non-personnel costs would increase from 3 to 5%. If you do that, then we project that the increase in the operating cost of the agency to provide the same level of service without any service reductions would be anywhere in the range of $125 to $150 million for 2011. But I'm not giving you a number to hold me by, because this was quick. This was overnight. It's real quickly running the numbers, but that's what we think the impacts would be in 2011.
Before I turn to Ms. Hutchins, whom I cut off in that last series of questions, she was about to ask one, I just want to clarify. This assumes that this is actually a cost increase, or is there a revenue increase included in this also? It looks like it's a subsidy line.
Yeah, and I apologize. It's also a net revenue. So it's net revenue and expense as well. The revenue reduction we don't show here, but.
Okay, but it doesn't include, for instance, a fare increase. Right.
No, it does not.
No, it does not include a ferry, for instance.
And does it assume or not assume that we use the $29 million for this year to balance the budget?
It does not continue. That's correct.
It figures we
says that we used it and
we used it one time.
It's part of the 125 to 150 that we've got to make up.
That's correct.
Okay. All right. Ms. Hutchins.
Okay. I think you've probably gone into that next fiscal year that I think we should all be concerned about. First of all, I have a question, because having listened to lots of discussion about the use of stimulus dollars, are we all clear that by shifting the capital to the operating that FDA or federal government would have no concerns about that, not need any approval?
We checked, rechecked, and rechecked again, and as late as yesterday afternoon, the answer's been the same.
Okay.
It's a legitimate expenditure.
Okay. I think that's very important, because we've all stood around the tables of trying to figure out how best we could use these. I'll tell you what my concern is. Chris talked about the Metro Matters and how we got here and the commitments that were made to address the significant maintenance improvements and maintenance of the system. And when we look at this shift and the definition of the stimulus dollars as to what they are to provide for us in terms of improving infrastructure, one of the greatest needs that we've defined and preached over and over to our region is the need for improvement there. We've all made the commitment from our own jurisdictions. We've gone out and generated the public support from our stakeholders. And as we do this, we are really, my concern is that we may be sending a false message. We may be sending a false message to people. You know, when you drop your Smart Trip card on the fare box, you know what you're paying for. You know what it's delivering for you. When you remove those capital commitments, the average user doesn't realize that the switch that we wanted to fix may not be fixed. Whatever would have been the impact may not occur. Not that we're saying that those are the things that we're missing, but we are starting to dig a hole again in the maintenance that we had committed to long ago. So I find it the wrong direction that we're going. I find that we're building a larger structural problem into our budget. I've said over and over that I think it's an important part that we have some discussion about what our budget means, how it will impact our customers, and allowing our customers to understand and be able to weigh in the decision-making process that we're in. And by looking at the stimulus dollars, not looking at the other issues, I think we're leaving them out of that. I think we're saying to them, don't worry, we'll take care of you, we're wise, and they won't be able to weigh in the middle of the year. They won't be able to weigh in really next year, when we all know budgets are going to be harder. I know what you've been asked to do, Mr. General Manager, but I think it's a serious concern that where in most governments around the area, they know that they're looking at 2011 as probably the most severe budgets that they're going to face. And so I think the caution that I would have is taking shortcuts that we may not be able to respond to next year only gives the message to our customers that we've made a decision that was reasoned, but we really haven't thought it through in actuality. So I'm very concerned about what we're being asked to do, and I think we need to think about what we are going to do over the next couple of years in this authority, not just in the short-sightedness of just this one year.
Mr. Graham was next.
Well, I just want to say, and Ms. Hutchins, we invite your other options, because, you know, I mean, it's one thing to be critical of this approach. It's quite another to come forward with either additional subsidy dollars or a proposal for service reductions, which you wish to sponsor. I mean, that's the dilemma that we face. And, you know, I listen very sympathetically to the points that you make. And I understand the points that you make. And, you know, I'm actually attracted to the points that you make. But the fact of the matter is that hardly anyone, maybe there's one, hardly anyone at this table has come forward and said, on behalf of their jurisdiction, and said, we are willing to increase subsidies to the following amount to take care of this $29 million gap, which, by the way, $16 million of it is actually attributable to Maryland. And so we haven't had that happen. We haven't had any proposal from any of the members in terms of service reduction. No one has said let's increase fares. You know, and you go down, and please listen to me, I'm not being in any sense critical of the points you're making, except to say that absent those types of options, what do we do? And I think that this has not come to those of us who support using federal stimulus, and I believe the state of Virginia is using federal stimulus. I believe the state of Commonwealth of Virginia.
Not for operating budget.
But we don't, I know the District of Columbia right now is strategizing that. We haven't got the final analysis yet. I'm sure other jurisdictions are as well. But we come to this from a lack of options. And if we want to be critical of this, I will be critical of it on the same grounds. But I also need to have a plan B. I need to have someone say to me where this $29 million is going to be found. And so it's with a lot of respect for your point of view that I'm saying this. But without the next step, without saying, okay, we're going to increase subsidy, we're going to increase fares, we're going to find service reductions, and then we're going to go out and defend them. Without that happening, you know, I don't know what to say. And so maybe there's a category of action that we haven't found. We've already, let me conclude on this remark, we've already had the general manager, and I like very much what Mr. Zimmerman had to remind us of. We have not a $29 million problem. We have $154 million, and we have solved, you know, a large part of that through actions already taken with consequences. And so now we come to the final nut, if you will, that we have to crack. And, you know, I sit here today, I'm willing to say to every member of this board, I'm open to other options, but I haven't heard any.
Well, may I respond?
Certainly. Ms. Hutchins and then Mr. Zimmerman.
If the option is to go out with this as the one option, then let's put the other two options on the table and let us come back and resolve it within that framework, because I think that means that we will have a full discussion. We'll have a full discussion to say, what are the other options that you would consider? I think by not doing that, that leaves us without that discussion. And I think that's not... That really does provide all of the jurisdictions to make choices. They make choices over subsidy, they make choices over increases, they make choices over reductions. But I think it is a fair and open discussion, because this one only gives one solution. And I think it's a very difficult solution, because the others have the opportunity to build in over the next budget. But I think we're not saying to the public what the real problem is and what the solution is.
Just one quick response. Do you have your service reduction proposals with you today, Ms. Hutchinson?
I surely can present them to you. I've been carrying them around for whatever.
Maybe you need to bring them out.
Well, when we can all put them out, but the point is we can talk about them, and we can say, we will go back and look at the $29 million of reductions and ask us to come back within that option, and $29 million of increases, and come back with the three of them as an option then. But, you know, what we're asking our public is, what's your input on the best choices that we can offer you? And I think to say we don't want to tell them that there can be some options, and hard as they may be, because this is also a hard one, because we will sit here a year from now trying to fill a hole that we are creating, and we can't tell anybody where the money for 2011 is coming. And I really believe it's a piece that requires a lot of discussion.
Okay, Mr. Zimmerman.
I'll yield to Mr. Solomon.
Okay, yeah. Mr. Solomon.
Yes, I'm on page 22 of 42. Mr. Cato, when you went through your analysis, there's a line item, $10 million redirection of existing funds from 2010 capital to operating. This goes to Chris and to Mr. Gordon's point. And we've already, at least there must have been a consensus at some point to transfer that 10 from capital to operating. Now we're talking about 29 additional million from stimulus money to operating. What's the difference in the analysis? If we've agreed in the consensus on the 10, why can't we get a consensus on the 29? Still capital to operating.
I can answer that if you want to. The way I remember it, our discussion, that was one where we were saying we are permanently going to do what we have been doing for many, many years. We had $20 million that we had been using for preventive maintenance. And after much discussion, the board and the staff, we decided that making that $30 million, which means an additional $10 million forever, or a 10-year capital program, it would be worth $100 million, was something we could probably live with, but something that we were uncomfortable with. What's before us now is taking that 30 that we've now gotten to and making it 60.
Can I make a clarification?
Oh, excuse me.
The definition of preventive maintenance, just to give the committee some information, is all activities, labor, supplies, services, all associated costs that we incur to preserve the system. And that's under the FTA guidelines, as you probably all know. Most other transits use those preventive maintenance, that definition, as operating costs, because most of our operating costs fall into that category. We are unique, where we obviously don't do that. We use only $20 million of that to cover preventative maintenance in our operating. And I just wanted to make that clarification.
Mr. Solomon, do you want to? Again, it goes back to Mr. Zimmerman, who yielded his time.
I just wanted one comment on that. From a philosophical point of view, capital to operating, we've already have a consensus apparently on 10. And to close the gap this year and, you know, not to do these service reduction, why can't we have another consensus on the 29? I'm just a little puzzled on that, and that's why I raised that question. Thank you.
Mr. Zimmerman.
And I would say directly to that, we certainly can. That was my whole point. It is a legitimate choice. And let me make it very clear, because I'm not sure it is clear. I am definitely not saying, and I don't believe I've heard anyone else say, that there's anything illegitimate about the proposal to use the stimulus funds in this manner. The stimulus funds are, in fact, the same funds, the 10 that are referred to here, all come through one federal program, Section 5309, I believe, which is the only way the feds have been giving any kind of money out to transit for a very long time now has been for capital dollars. And they do it through this formula program, and we get it like everybody else does, and we use it for a capital program. And there is a portion of that that you can use for what's being called preventive maintenance. That basically means capital-related stuff. It normally falls in your operating budget because they're not things you're going to bond for. No, they're not 20, 30-year long-term, but they are related to the maintenance of those assets of that life. So the feds say that's perfectly legitimate for you to do.
And absolutely, there's no problem with us doing that as far as the federal law or the intent. I think this is within the intent and spirit, as well as the law, of the overall federal program and specifically the provision in the ARRA. That one. That's entirely legitimate. The only question for me, and I think the question for us, is what is best for our budget, for what we're doing this year and next year and the year after. And that's what this is all about. And so my whole point is simply that, you know, we got a really tough position. We're in a really tough spot here. I mean, the constraints with which we're trying to put together a budget, no increase in subsidy, despite the fact that costs are going up anyway, no increase in fares, and, you know, don't cut service. I mean, what does that lead you to do? Well, it leads you to do a whole lot of things, some of which aren't entirely responsible. Now, if you've got a bad year and you do some things like that, I mean, it's not legitimate to say, all right, we're going to put off some stuff this year. The roof is in great shape, but we're not going to repair it this year. We'll try to get through to the next year. And there's a certain amount of that that's perfectly legitimate to do. You have to decide, number one, how much of it you really think you can get away with, recognizing that you have that expense next year. And which are the ones, what are you getting to the point where something's going to be catastrophic? And I want us to understand two things. One being that with the stuff that's been before us here and that we seem to have, you know, acceptance of, that our customers are going to see poorer service this year. They will. And we have to be prepared for that, and we have to prepare to tell them, yes, that's right, because we didn't have the money to do stuff. And that's why you're not getting X, Y, Z, the things that are going to come up. We need to remember that. Because next year, we have the same situation, and we have to, number one, be saying, you know, should our governments be thinking now about higher subsidy, even though they're going to have a lousy year next year? Because I think we can all pretty much count on that. Should they nonetheless be saying, prioritize this so you're going to put some more money in here anyway? And by the way, I'll say right now, my answer is yes to that, and I'm one of the people that has to vote on that sort of thing. But even in a bad year like this, our governments make choices, and ours, for one, said, we have certain priorities. Safety net programs are one thing. You know, basic services are a second. And environmental obligations. And then everything else is basically, I mean, we're having, you know, all kinds of angst over community, about nature centers and things in my jurisdiction, because we set those priorities. This, to me, falls in all three of them. It's a basic service, it's a safety net program, and it's an environmental obligation. I would prioritize it and put more money into it, despite the fact that we got a tough year. And what happened 2 weeks ago when the chairman of this committee said, you know, can we take this 29 home and take care of it in our budgets? I right away said yes. I'm not sure that I was the only one. I thought the Maryland folks were telling us they were too. My understanding is that Maryland was interested in doing that. But in any case, clearly, Mr. Chairman, the answer to our board chairman's question earlier was answered. There have been other proposals put on the table. I'll go back to what Ms. Hudgens was just saying. I really support the way she was approaching it, which I think was to say, if we're going to do this, let's put everything on the table and let's let everybody in on it. I mean, my approach from the beginning has been, don't write the budget before the hearing. Take the options to hearing, bring the larger community in, weigh all those, then come back and do it. What we're trying to do now is set something, basically make it a fait accompli and maybe not even have to go to hearings, I guess. We know we won't like a lot of what we hear, but what we're depriving ourselves that way, we're depriving ourselves of the opportunity to really hear the community's priorities, but also to get a larger conversation going so that some of the folks that have to make the funding decisions that aren't here at these meetings every week, you know, also have to take a look at what these choices are. And, you know, we wouldn't be the only ones making that decision. I think it would be a better informed decision. I'm prepared to put everything out as on the table, from, you know, service impacts to fares to, you know, to anything else you want to put on there, and then come back and do it. Otherwise, we're just, again, having to decide how much of this problem we want to put off to next year. And if that's what we're going to do, I do think people need to start looking at those last two pages and say, how is it 12 months from now we're going to deal with what is probably, I think, a reasonable guess of $125 to $150 million hole. But it's a repeat without the plugs we use this time, and that's the problem. You know, the thing you use, the one-time thing you use this year, you don't have next year.
You have the stimulus again.
You mean if they pass another one?
Well, it's 2 years, a two-year program.
well, again, how much can you get out of this? And we can, you know, we can plug some numbers for that, and I don't know how much, I think you're using all the money that's in the stimulus that's coming through this fiscal year 09. Maybe a two-year bill, but I think all the money that's coming through that program is in here. I don't think there's any more 5309 funds coming out of this bill.
No, you're
I think we do know that. We know exactly how much it is. Again, I believe we know exactly what it is. On the fair side, since the board did set a fair policy, you should have a pretty rough estimate of how much fair increase next year will gain. What is that? What magnitude is that?
Order of magnitude, I mean, just on average, if it's a 10 cent or a 6% increase, that would probably derive about $35 million worth of revenue.
Okay, so, you know, again, we can go higher, but the fair policy, what we were expecting to do, would yield somewhere around $35 million off this 150 to 125.
That's correct. And
again, you've got to be ready to plug the rest of that hole. I don't know how we do that.
Okay, Mr. Linton and Mr. Giancola.
You know, I heard a lot of discussion about the preventive maintenance definition and how, since I was there and put it together, I want to make some reference to a couple of things there. One of the things that was a concern of the Office of Management and Budget when we came up with preventive maintenance, they actually wanted me to put a cap on how much money the transit agencies could actually use, that they could actually transfer capital to preventive maintenance. And the concern that they had at the time was whether or not the transit agencies would start using so much money from their capital for preventive maintenance that they would start depleting their actual capital supply, that they would lead to the kind of issues that Mr. Zimmerman mentioned, because they weren't quite sure that they could give the flexibility, or they could trust the local decision makers to make the right choices. So there, in essence, you know, was a lot of discussion about we need to cap that because they won't make the right decisions locally. That they will get so enamored with the idea that they can continue to use capital for operating that they will start using that to the point that we have depleted fleets around the country, that we'll be creating major problems over a long period of time. So that was an interesting, you know, debate that I had to have continuous with OMB. And what I said to them is that we can allow the local jurisdictions to manage their budgets and give them the flexibility to make good decisions. And we would think that they would use that ability to do what's best for the long-term purpose of the authority. A couple of things that I'm concerned about here, and I think Mr. Zimmerman raised that, is that we are making a short-term decision. We may be, in fact, filling a small budget problem and making that an enormous budget problem in the latter year. At a time when we anticipate that we may have additional financial challenges. I think what was discussed earlier was about putting this out at least so the public knows what both the consequences are and what the choices are that we're making. That by using the preventive maintenance and transferring money this year from capital, that we are subjecting ourselves to a future decision that could, in fact, be larger fare increases, that could, in fact, be bigger gaps next year, because we are structurally altering the agency's budget, not just for this year, but for the following year. And I think just at least having that discussion is something that we need to do, so that it's very clear that this is an option that we're taking and we're rolling the dice for this year and hoping that things will get better. And that we have a solution next year that will get us through this, but we're not anticipating that's going to be the case. So I agree with Supervisor Hutchins that we should, in fact, put forth all the options.
Mr. Giancola.
Yeah, I wanted a clarification on the element of the 6% you used. Of course, we did pass a policy last year to do every 2 years a cost of living adjustment. I thought it was related to a consumer price index. So you're saying it's averaging 3 right now?
I think it was.
I was thinking it was more like 4. right now.
We just assumed, I just gave an order of magnitude that it was, if 10 cents, if it was a 10 cents increase in fare, is that 6% or is it?
Yeah,
it
roughly
is.
6%.
Okay.
And the policy didn't dictate how the fare increase would be calculated. It just set a calendar date for which staff could not propose.
I thought we said we were going to use a certain index as our guide.
There was a lot of discussion about it, but the
and
final
I thought
action,
they said, I think Mr. Zimmerman is the one that suggested the consumer price index. I was looking for a transportation index at the time, but he, yeah. So, you know, I'm looking at 8% now, not necessarily 6%. Well, I'm just, you know, you're assuming it's going to be around 6%. You're saying that generates, a 6% generates about $35 million?
That's correct.
Okay.
Order of magnitude.
Ms. Hewlett.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This has been an excruciatingly painful process for everyone. It's impossible to wrap your arms around any of the choices that we have before us. We have been successful in cutting this $154 million projected deficit down to 29, but even that has been very, very painful. And I, like everyone else, I'm sure, feels terrible about the valued WMATA employees that we lost in this process. Everything that we're doing here is just so extraordinarily painful. And I think if we go with using the stimulus money alone, we are creating a bigger problem for next year. And as Mr. Zimmerman pointed out, next year starts come December. We start that process come December, which is only a matter of months away. So it's not even a full year. I think what Mr. Linton said is, you know, sometimes, basically, I heard him say is, we have to do it. We have to do the right thing. There does come a point in time where you have to do the right thing. We are darned if you do and darned more if you don't, it seems to me. And I'm paraphrasing. And I think right now it comes to a matter of courage. Because this is very difficult. No one wants to be out on the limb and say we want to do service cuts. No one wants to terminate any more employees. And yet we know that the stimulus money, while it is a quick fix for now, it doesn't help us next year and creates a bigger problem next year, bigger fare increases. And no one wants to do any of those things. So I think we have to look at service cuts. We're trying to work with the jurisdictions to make sure that as we explore service cuts, there are cuts that that least impact our customers. And there are ways of doing that. Now, yes, people are going to feel the pain already. Mr. Zimmerman has already indicated that they will feel some pain already. But maybe working together, just as everybody's doing in this economy, people are eliminating cable. The people are doing alternative things in their own private lives, and maybe it might mean leaving home a little bit earlier because the headway is greater between buses. Maybe it might mean, you know, there are a number of things like that that. But maybe we can do that working together with our customers, and maybe we can hear from them when we go to public hearing, and they can hear from us also the gravity of the situation and all the options that are on the table. I think the state of Maryland, for one, somebody stop me if I'm going out on a limb here, but I think the state.
We will stop you.
Okay. But I do think the state of Maryland is at least willing to look at some combination of service cuts and increased subsidy, and because we know that too many service cuts can be you know, extraordinarily problematic, and we're not trying to prevent people from getting to work in this economy, and everybody needs their jobs. But I think we have to have some sort of combination of go to hearing, public hearing, with all the choices on the table, and It's been a very, very rough situation, and there's no easy answer. But I think we have to have the courage to step out there and do what is right to avoid a problem next year. I mean, I understand the short-term fix, and I know Mr. Graham asked, you know, earlier, he asked you, well, okay, so this is the only choice left because nobody has any service cuts. But we can work on those. We can continue to work on those proposed service cuts. I mean, it's not, we're not limited to today.
Mr. Albert.
So how much time do we have left to close this budget?
Last week, actually, was our deadline, and we extended it a week. So today really is the day for this committee to take an action on a public hearing.
Well, wait, is that accurate? Is public hearing in time for our budget or public hearing period?
Public hearing, that we would actually do a public hearing, and then we would kick-start the process to actually do the public hearing, which is scheduled. I don't have the schedule with me, but we had it last time.
Let me make a point of clarification, if we could. That is correct. Based upon the original schedule that we had and the amount that we calculated, if you change the date, then we have to do some recalculation, but there was no, the magic was just to achieve a certain amount and also to coincide the reductions with the pick for services. So that's not a rule that we have to follow.
Right. Thank you.
It does impact us, so it means it changes the numbers some. It means you have to cut a little bit more because the amount of time is less.
If I may paraphrase what you said.
Yes.
We do have more time, but if we do, you would implement service changes a little bit later or whatever
yes.
you decide on, so they would have to be slightly larger.
Yes.
So I just want to be clear. So there is still time for public input into suggestions that might come out of this body. And that's factored into your calculations.
I'm sorry.
So there is still time. I don't know what decision the board's going to make today, but is there still time to take whatever decisions are made here today for public input?
Yes. That's what the public hearing does.
Yeah.
Yes, there is time to do that. You know, the window is closing because you want to approve this budget.
So how much time are you giving for public input?
Is it, Florida, 2 weeks? Thank you. Yeah.
So 2 weeks from today.
Mr. Albert, may I just get a clarification? If, in fact, what we did is went out to the public and said, here's a plan of specific service cuts, because if you do a general thing, nobody knows what you're talking about. Here's a plan of a specific fare increase. And we'd have to figure out what we would actually say to people relative to that. Here's a plan of using stimulus money in order to reduce capital expenditure to be used for operating. And that one would be a really hard one for people to understand.
But
we are essentially doing in parallel the public hearing process that we were talking about before with an input from the public about what we're doing. Now, if that would take a week or two longer, that would mean there are some more dollars that we'd have to cut in order to make next year's budget balance. Is that really what you're talking about?
That, yes.
Can I ask a question? You know, I think if we don't have any service reduction, there is no need to have a notice to the public, because we have not heretofore sent out our budget for public comment. Now, there may be a discussion that we need to have about whether we ought to do that, but we haven't done it. And so if we have our budget in place without service reductions, without fare increase, tell me if I'm wrong about this, but I don't think there is any obligation to go to the public, is there?
No.
I think the proposal is a little
not.
Different. Yeah.
But I'm just trying to get my handle on the technical issue here. And maybe we want to do it, but at least we haven't previously. Am I right?
Yes, that's correct. That's correct.
Okay.
I believe what's being put on the table is a new concept, Mr. Graham.
Well, I hear the new concept, but I'm still trying to work through the old concept in terms of what our responsibilities are under the old concept. And let me just say one other thing. I think in terms of the service reductions, we had this committee, this board, has had no discussion. None. You know, we started off with we're going to shut down the system at 9 o'clock. You know, was in the media, and everybody went crazy. But we've not discussed a single service reduction. There's been a little bit of a mention about metro access in terms of complying simply with federal guidelines in the future. But we would have to start that process because, you know, we have many questions. We have our own list of possible service reductions, but that may or may not be acceptable to the rest of you, and vice versa. And so at this point in time, to begin that process would require the delay that we're talking about.
Ms. Hudgens.
You did step back and you said that, and I think what you were saying, legal requirements, if we make actually service changes, we are required to go to our public. I think as a body, I think we should feel required to go to our budget, our public. It is their budget that we will control. It is not our budget. They are going to be the ones that will pick out of the pocket that we pay from the jurisdictions. And so I think it's important that we go out no matter what. I think you're right. We really have boxed ourselves into that limited discussion. And I think, I have to say, I just think we've avoided it until we now are at the gate. And that's an unfortunate decision that we've made. I think we were all startled that we would not have the discussion. And I want you to understand my viewpoint. I think the service we provide is the most critical service that's provided in this region. And I believe that we have a loyal customer. But I think we ought to be open and trust the intelligence of our customers and let them weigh in on our process. And then we make our commitments, as Chris said, as to jurisdictionally what is it that we're trying to do and what are our priorities and how will we meet those priorities together with other jurisdictions. That's just a simple process of community involvement that I just live by. And
well, we all do. We all live by that.
Okay, let's all get on board then.
Particularly who are elected.
Well, then I don't see why we're having such difficulty then.
Because
it feels bad. Let me just finish. It feels bad, but you know some of the best decisions you have to make don't always feel good, but they help you do what's right. And that's what the issue is here.
At this point, I believe Mr. McKay is the only one that hasn't had a say. Do you wish to say something?
I would be glad to. I completely agree with what Kathy just said. I mean, I don't know how you don't have a public hearing, period. But secondly, for me, the key to budgets is sustainability. We just got a snapshot of next year, puts us in the same boat we're in this year. We made extensive one-time cuts in a lot of cases to get down to $20 million this year already. And to act like you're not going to have to make service changes or there's going to be some kind of patch we can use is careless. It's careless. I mean, the elephant in the room is service cuts. There is no way you can look at these documents today and say that we can sustain the level of service that we provide right now next year. There's just no way to do it. Even if you implement a fare increase next year and take care of the 29, 30 million, whatever the amount of fare increase ends up being, you still have a $100 million problem next year. And we're sitting here today complaining about a $29 million problem. There's no way you can sustain that level of service in any reasonable manner. And so for us to act like we shouldn't talk about service cuts or put those out to the public for a public hearing does an enormous disservice to our customers. We have an obligation to be realistic to them, to give them a preview of a coming distraction. I'm not aware of one single public body or publicly funded entity in these economic times that is not talking about service cuts. Not one that I'm aware of. Certainly we're doing it in Fairfax. I know other jurisdictions are doing it. So to do something differently, in my opinion, is careless. We should get on with the program, put forward service cuts from the different jurisdictions that amount to their portion of this, advertise those, have a public hearing, get public input, and move forward. To me, this is not a hard thing. It's something, it's painful, but as stewards of public money, we have no choice but to do that if we're going to be honest with our customers. So I think we need to move forward from this point, advertise those service cuts, get comments from the public, be responsible, look at what next year's problem is, square in the eye, and start talking about that now in the context of this year's budget. It's the only responsible thing to do.
Mr. Zimmer.
I associate myself with the remarks of Kay. Mr. Graham is correct that the compact only requires hearings for certain things like changes in bus routes and fare increases. And for the most part, this agency has followed what was the bare minimum from the compact amendment. Now, in recent years, we've started to change some of that, engage customers in ways not required by the compact, but that we felt responsible to do. And so we now have a writer's council, as one example. I think that most of us in elective office are used to having
our budget's up every single year. In Virginia, we have to vote to reestablish our taxes every year, something neither the United States Congress nor any state legislature has to do. But we are made to vote on it every single year. And the budget process, I think, you know, we're used to it and we're used to hearing from our citizens, and we probably think it makes for better budgets in the end. You may approach the hearing with, you're going to be listening to literally hundreds of people, with some trepidation and, something to sit there through all that. But when you get through it, you say, you have pages of notes, and you know something more than you knew before, and you know in the end you made a better decision as a result, even if some of that was tough. Ours is coming up week after next. We have, we're going to be three long nights of hearings, I know. I don't know how many they do in Fairfax, but it's quite a few because they're a bigger place than we are. And I believe that, that's the kind of thing we ought to be doing here. You could argue that it's not necessary every year. But even if you think that, this is an extraordinary year. This is unusual, whatever we do. And again, it's not just $29 million, do we make service cuts or not? I'm telling you, we already have made service cuts. And we ought to invite the public to weigh in on that. The only thing I would add to the two previous statements, that I think what we should go out with is something that is not simply, this is it, and this makes a difference. I think we need to put something that is a little bit more of a menu, provide some more options, so that we're not coming back afterwards and having nothing else we can do. We've got to give people some kind of choices. And I think you did, Mr. Chairman, outline the set of things we're choosing from. How much are we cutting service? How much are we going to consider any kind of increment to fare this year? And how much are we taking it out of next year's budget, basically, for the future capital?
Can I just clarify? I'm not, I asked a technical question. I mean, we have 6 weeks of budget hearings at the council. I've been on the council for my 11th year. I'm certainly in favor of including the public in these discussions. And I was just simply pointing out that it would be a different approach. That's all I was saying. I mean, I would be very supportive of it. The problem that we have is, in theory, you can say, let's put out service reductions. But in actuality, we have discussed none of them. And we would now have to begin a process of seeing what we could agree on. Because I, as one member of this board, do not favor putting out any proposal for public comment that I can't at least potentially support. I am not going to put out, for example, we close the system at 9 o'clock. I'm not going to do that for public comment, any more than you're going to do some things that are in your mind. And so we would have to begin a process now to really hash through, to my mind, what the service reductions are that we would consider potentially subject of support by this board. And that's not going to happen. I have to leave in an hour. It's not going to happen in this next hour. And 2 weeks ago, we were at this point. And a week ago, we were at a different point. And I don't want to rehash that. I don't think anything is served by that. But the fact of the matter is that we've burned up 2 weeks here for various reasons. And I don't think putting out to the public that the jurisdictions increase subsidies is also not a very realistic option. Some want to, maybe. Others have announced that they won't. From the very beginning of this budget process, the message came back from the jurisdictions, we will not pay any more subsidies. Am I right or am I wrong? And we have proceeded on that assumption. So we end up with not as many realistic options as we might have in theory at this point. Because I'm not in favor of just saying, okay, send out these service reductions. I want to examine service reductions. I want to see what's going on.
So what does that process look like?
It looks like weeks.
Let me hazard, as chair of the committee, let me hazard a suggestion which is fraught with all sorts of difficulties, but at least might be able to move us forward. I've been listening to all the various comments that have been here, and I'm very concerned about the fact that we get ourselves caught in exactly what Mr. Zimmerman says. I am intrigued by the fact that several members of this committee strongly believe that we need additional public input and reasonable input in the process. I'm hearing a call for that input to be not just one thing, but multiple things. So let me propose a possibility for hearings and something substantive so that, in fact, we could do it probably within 2 weeks. We could be ready and start to go out to hearing. But it would require everybody to be willing to do their part of it. first part of this is, we have $29 million. We know what the share of each jurisdiction is of that $29 million. I know that Maryland is willing to commit to come up with a combination of subsidy increases and service reductions that would cover its share. As Mr. Graham points out, we're 16 million of the 29 million, we're the biggest piece. We could, within the next 2 weeks, come up with what our share would be, and therefore come up with what service reductions we would have to do. And if every jurisdiction could do that, that could be one of three elements that would go to public hearing. But it would mean that each of us would have to come up to a package which, as Mr. Graham correctly points out, stands alone. It can't affect other jurisdictions, other than to save the money, which would be okay. So it would have to be one in which it would solve the problem without causing any damage to any other jurisdiction. Mr. Zimmerman.
The only question I have about that is, does that mean they have to be entirely intra-jurisdictional changes? And does that mean, therefore, you're basically not doing anything on the rail system?
I would argue at this point you would probably not be doing anything on the rail system, because otherwise we get exactly into where Mr. Graham is. We're going to have to get an agreement on that. If we can work out an agreement on what we can do on the rail system, that's great. It lowers the threshold for everybody.
I appreciate the spirit of what you're trying to do, and I'm open to anything here. But my reservation about that is, I'm not sure how comfortable I am going out saying we're going to consider, among other things, a big hit to bus services, but rail's off the table.
Okay, and here's my suggestion on that, and your point is a very valid one. There's nothing that says that in the process, while we are in public hearing, we can't, as a committee, consider potential adjustments to rail, which then take that threshold and move them down. And as long as they are not things that require public hearing, we're okay.
Yeah, except that the spirit of this is that public hearing should encompass the rail.
Then what we have to do is undertake Mr. Graham's process, which would take longer. And, you know, maybe next week or the week after we'd be willing to sit down and do it and get it all out to hearing, that would be fine.
Let me say, Mr. Chairman, I do not feel the need to endorse anything that's going out to hearing. I mean, that's the beauty of the process. You know, we take our county manager's budget to hearing. I don't own a penny of it yet, you know, and we'll hear what the public thinks about his proposal.
Okay.
So, you know, I don't need to own what goes out. I need to own what I vote on afterwards.
I hear you, and let me go through the entire package, and then you can all rip it apart, because, you know, it has lots and lots of potential defects, but I'm at least trying to put something on the table that reflects what I think I've heard here. And one possibility would be to take the general manager's suggestions for rail service changes and put them into the package and just say, okay, here's a set of suggestions. We don't know whether we accept any of those or not, but here they are. The second element of this, what I think I have heard, is the possibility, in spite of the fact that it violates a prior board policy, that we can always change our own policies, of a fare increase. And what we heard was 10 cents across the board will generate enough to solve the problem. Now, it will, in fact, not solve the problem for Maryland, but it will for everybody else, I suspect. Matter of fact, some of you will have subsidy reductions. Maryland will still have to increase its subsidy if we do a 10 cent across the board. But it's certainly worth putting out there for discussion, and if it were the decision by the board to go ahead with just a 10 cent across the board fare increase, I'm pretty sure that we in Maryland would find a way to solve that problem, and we would come up with a solution. But it also allows us the combination of some service reductions, some fare increase. It would have to be up to 10 cents. And the 10 cents would, in fact, as close as I can tell, given what staff has said, solve the problem. The third one, and this one I'm not quite sure how you explain it to the public, is the concept of taking capital and using some capital dollars for operating. And I don't know how you explain to them the implications of doing that, because they aren't going to really understand what it does long term in terms of creating larger demand for fare increases or service reductions
in
the future year.
They can understand buses you don't buy.
Yeah, can you give us a breakdown of what, of the $29 million, what each jurisdiction shares of the $29
million? Yes, right, we have that.
You're at about five.
Yes.
Do you mind if I just hear this?
It's in here, right?
Yeah, of the 29 million, the district is about 4.9. Montgomery County is 7.8. Prince George's County is 8.2. City of Alexandria is a little bit less than $1 million. Arlington County is 2.6. City of Fairfax is a little over $100,000. Fairfax County is 4.1. And the city of Falls Church is about $65,000.
What was the Fairfax County?
Fairfax County was 4.1 million.
Okay. So one thing we could do right now to just pick up on what you're saying is for each of those jurisdictions to go off and come back with, here's what we would do, you know, whether it be from increased payments or whatever service reductions you figured you could sustain, and come back in a week's time?
I think 2 weeks would probably be better, make sure everybody's got it all locked up.
At least we would have something to share at that point as to how each jurisdiction was going to handle this. My hesitation is that we were at this point, Mr. Benjamin, I don't want to put you on the griddle here, we were at this point just a short time ago, and Maryland came back empty-handed.
We weren't entirely empty-handed.
Well, you didn't have a proposal.
We had a proposal, but not a complete proposal. What I'm saying is, in 2 weeks, we will have a proposal.
You have nothing to present. And so, but in 2 weeks' time, you think you'll have a proposal?
We will have a proposal.
For $16 million. Well, I think, do you think the District of Columbia, do you think we could come up with a $5 million proposal?
Yes, and if we have the time.
Well, if we had 2 weeks?
Yes.
We would use all stimulus money, I see. That was just a joke.
These districts don't know.
You're funny.
And keep in mind, we have to decide whether we want just that first piece, which we had decided on before, or the other two also. Mr. McKay.
What would be the problem with taking out the advertising page 5 of 21 of the February 26 presentation, which outlines the general manager's $29 million service reductions? What's the problem with taking that out fully? February 26 tab.
Well, because we don't read it. We've been over that.
Page 5 of 21.
We're not. We wouldn't support that.
Well, you wouldn't. My question is, what is the problem that this board has outside?
If we don't support it, it won't happen.
That's not my question.
Well, but that's the reality.
Certainly that's not the way we want to operate this board, I wouldn't think. But my question is what is the objection to taking that out? Simply put, what is your objection to advertising this recommendation?
It's not the reductions that we would make.
But that should not be.
That's the purpose of the public hearing, is to hear from the public as to what reductions they think are appropriate and which ones are not.
Can I offer Mr. Graham a comfort level? You get a chance to stand there and say it's his budget. In all honesty, you get a chance to really, maybe, clearly offer suggestions that you would like to happen.
I would rather try this other approach, which is, this is my point of view, Mr. McKay. You know, I'd rather try the other approach where, since these dollars are proportionately represented by the various jurisdictions, but the jurisdictions go off and come back and tell us how they're going to find those savings.
Well, just a follow-up question, if I might, Mr. Chairman.
Certainly.
That may be fine, but that doesn't solve two critical components in my mind. One, it doesn't address the rail situation, because how does a jurisdiction come up with their rail cuts? And secondly, a suggestion was made about fare increases. Well, no jurisdiction can decide that on their own either. And so how do we come up, unless your direction is to the jurisdictions, if this is what I'm hearing, is to come up with exclusive reductions in bus service by jurisdiction that amounts to their share, if that's what you want to advertise, then I think that direction makes sense, if that's what you want to advertise. I object to that because rail is not on the table.
It's not.
Fare increases are not on the table if you do that. If you just ask jurisdictions to come back with how they can save their subsidy amount, then they're coming back with exclusive bus reductions in those amounts.
No, they have subsidy contributions. We've heard over and over, Jeff, we've heard over and over again that some of these jurisdictions have additional monies.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'd like to have that kind of concretized, because it's been mentioned again and again and again.
But you're
putting... And by the way, in the District of Columbia, we will go look at that same issue. So I don't think you should limit this just to bus. It is not limited just to bus.
But you're taking out rail entirely, and you're taking out fare increases entirely.
Mr. McKay, may I insert an idea?
Sure.
If you go to page 15 of 15 of the previous date, the February 19th date, you will see what the general manager proposed as Metro Rail service reductions. And I agree that we're unlikely to come up with an agreement on all of them, but we certainly could take those specific ones, put them out to hearing, and make them part of the package. And that would then give you part of what you're talking about. I do still think that we would want to have part of the package being each jurisdiction solving its share of the 29 with strictly, I don't want to say non-regional, because in fact you might do a regional route that only affects your jurisdiction, but things that only affect your jurisdiction and subsidy adjustments. But you could also take this, and then if we want to do a fair element, I would suggest an up to 10 cents across the board, just to hear what people say. And then all of those things would be going out simultaneously. We will be talking with our public. They will know what it is that we are considering. It will be a true public hearing in the sense that it's not a fait accompli. We're going to have to come back, take the public input, and decide what we're going to do about it. But we'll have a set of options, all of which works, each one of which works, that then allows us to do a mix and match or choose any one and say this is where we want to be. And that's what I think I've been hearing here. Mr. Zimmerman.
Well, I don't know what Mr. Zimmerman's reaction to that is, but I know he obviously has significant misgivings about what the general manager has on that list. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering if some variant on that would get us there more quickly than having him on the whole list. But what if we could take that and say, you know, members, any jurisdiction basically can come back and say, we want to substitute this for what was on the list.
I'm sorry, when we say the list, are you talking about the rail one or the...
Well, I'm talking about what you were just talking about, manager, which was from February 20 or 19th, whatever it was.
The general manager's list of rail
whatever it was, you know, to say we don't like this... I think there's bus route changes there, but the particular...
No, I'm talking about only his rail changes.
Oh, you're leaving
only that one page. The bus stuff would be done by the various jurisdictions individually. Not affecting anybody. So we wouldn't get into that. February 19th, page 15.
It's the last page.
Metro Rail service reductions... only. It would allow us to put something out there that has been proposed by staff and that could be used in combination with other things to solve problems.
We cannot, you know. I think if we want to have a discussion about what service reductions we can all, you know, more or less agree on, then we should have that discussion. We should have it. We haven't had it. We really haven't. We've had various things presented to us, but we haven't discussed it. But to just take lock, stock, and barrel something, and we have problems. Now that I look again at that page, we have problems with that. We have problems with extending the headways in off-peak hours, you know, in the District of Columbia in the evenings. You know, this is a problem for us.
But what this is giving you.
So we are not going to put out a proposal that we reject out of hand. And so I don't know how else to say that.
Mr. Graham, I remember a lecture that you gave me 2 weeks ago where you said things about whether people should make ultimatums and what one jurisdiction will or will not
That's
do.
That's true. I'm trying to avoid that.
Well, let's look at the possibility of asking the public.
We came into this meeting today with a solution, and I'm willing to consider other solutions, but we need a solution.
I think we're working our way towards a solution if everybody can cooperate.
Well, I think you've got to bring this to some kind of a... Well, why don't we try this, the jurisdictions go off and come back?
Well, I think we're hearing that there's a substantial interest in a couple other elements to that. And the substantial interest is to have some other options, including the potential of use of capital money to...
Well, we have those options on the table. As you point out, they're in this document.
We're talking about...
We can look at these in 2 weeks, but at least we'd have each jurisdiction play a card. We haven't had any cards played.
Well,
we can hear from Maryland as to how much additional money you have. You know what I'm saying?
Mr. Graham, what I would like to do is come up with a structure that we all agree to, one element of which is what you're calling for. But additional pieces so that everybody here feels comfortable that we're going out to public hearing with something that at this point we all agree to is the thing that we will go to public hearing with, then everybody's going to come up with their piece.
Yes. So in 2 weeks' time, we'll return with this.
No, I'm suggesting that we, at this point, consider the possibility of a public hearing that includes all of the elements. And what I'm hearing is, you know, and we have to decide how we're going to do this. Those elements in and of themselves, any one of them would solve, quote, the problem. So that gives us plenty of flexibility coming out of public hearing to say, we want half of this, a third of this, two-thirds of that, and a piece of that. But it would give us a set of options after we've heard what the public has to say. And the suggestion is the individual jurisdiction inputs on bus service and subsidy increases as a package that solves that problem for that jurisdiction without impacting negatively any other jurisdiction.
Well, when are we going to get that in?
That's within 2 weeks. That's in 2 weeks. That we would do, going out to public hearing, the possibility of a 10-cent across-the-board fare increase, which we were just told would, in fact, solve the problem in general. I know it will not solve the problem for Maryland, but we'll deal with that. That we would also look at the potential of using capital money in the operating budget, understanding that the implications for future years are larger fare increases and more service reductions than would otherwise be the case that we're moving at over 1 year. That is a package that I thought I heard people here saying, and all I'm trying to do is synthesize this into something that
reflects
what I'm hearing.
Well, why would we have the package to look at?
What we're saying is 2 weeks from now, well, most of the elements we already know. We just said what they are. The only thing that's left is individual jurisdictions coming up with a package that does not adversely affect any other jurisdiction.
Say that again. I'm sorry. This is
individual jurisdictions would come up with a package,
right,
which is a combination of subsidy increases and service reductions on bus,
right,
that would solve their part of the problem of the $29 million
so
without adversely impacting any other jurisdiction. So, for instance, I know that in Maryland, we will come up with proposals for some regional routes, but those are regional routes entirely within Maryland, and what they'll do is they'll reduce your subsidy, but we'll live with that.
But you'll have that in 2 weeks' time.
In 2 weeks.
So this is, in effect, postponed for 2 weeks to consider.
No, I'd like to get everybody to agree to that. Okay. This is
and
what
how
we're
much
going
are
to
the
do.
Parking fees going to go up?
But the only thing we talked about is across the board, 10 cent.
No, we haven't.
Increase.
Everything is on the table now, Mr. Benjamin. Everything is on the table now.
Describing his proposal.
Well, his proposal is, you know, we want to know how much parking fees are going to go up. We want to know how much parking we're going to charge for the weekends in the 50 cents.
Yeah.
There is money in that, and we can go over all that again. But see, there we go.
We can do all of that after we go out to public hearing.
No, but we go out to public hearing with that.
Well, if we wait for everything that everybody wants to look at, we're not going to go to public hearing.
Well, but you see, you don't want to go out to public hearing with the things that you don't like.
That's.
There are a bunch of things I don't like in this.
And then you criticize us for feeling the same way.
No, Mr. Graham, there are a bunch of things in here that I don't like.
Nothing in
here. You know, I don't like service. I don't like increasing fares.
The parking fees should be part of what we go out to public hearing on. Weekend fees and an increase in the weekday fees. If we're going out with a fare increase, which is what I heard you say, then we should go out with a fee increase.
Okay, let me suggest we can take the 10 cents across the board, and for the purposes of hearing, apply it to parking as well as everything else. As for weekend parking, we have ample analysis that it actually costs us money.
No, the last analysis I saw, there was a gain of $1 million.
No, cost money.
The last analysis.
No.
What page is that on?
I apologize, we don't have the parking information.
I thought it was in
last. It was in last week's committee notes, but we didn't have the committee.
So
we don't have it in the package.
It can't be 10 cents.
We didn't have the meeting.
It's got to be 50 cents, please.
Oh, wait a minute. Let's do the weekend parking. If I remember correctly, what was given to us, we actually showed that there would be no revenue generated at any kind of reasonable parking fee.
That was the first report.
I'm sorry, no, it was the last report. In excess of the costs incurred. Is that correct?
No, no, there was no...
Would you let them answer, please, sir?
The last report did not have...
Mr. Graham, would you please let them answer?
We actually had the revenue and then the expense at the last full committee meeting, and we showed that at a dollar. What we did not have was the loss of what we considered revenue from rail, because we had data that was a little dated. What we did subsequent to that, because the committee asked us to go back, and we never presented this last Thursday because we adjourned, we looked at what it would take from a trip from point A to B, including the parking for one individual, for a family of three, and we analyzed that at certain routes. And I apologize, I do not have that information here, but given that information at a dollar and at $2.50, the break-even point, actually, including the loss on rail revenue, was more like $3. We'd have to increase parking by about $3. And that was just from memory what we had. I apologize, I don't have it. But
here you are. I remember it. Well, let's put out a 50-cent increase in parking fees.
I'm more than willing to apply the 10-cent across the board.
We do have it on a February 26th presentation. If you look at it on page 7 of 21, I apologize. This was the initial analysis that we had done. It does not include the family of three trips that you had asked about and then the individual from point A from point B.
Do you have the one that you did most recently, the one that said, up to $2.50, you can't?
Oh, this is that one. This is that one. Yeah.
February, say it again, February 26th.
February 26th, page 7 of 21. I know.
Yes, here it is. It's an annual expense of $1.7 million and revenue of $3.5 million. So that's a net of $1.8 million without consideration of the elasticity issues. This was the last that we looked at. It's page 8.
Yes, which month?
Which date is this?
This is the last one that we looked at. It's the February the 26th. It's a net of $1.8 million.
Yeah, but the one that they've since done, that included everything.
Your question?
Yeah, go ahead.
But I haven't seen it.
Mr. Chair, I just want to make a...
What about the one that was not presented, Mr. Chairman?
That's the one I'm talking about.
It's not in the...
Which you don't have.
It was an addendum to our...
People go get copies of that.
Right, copies of that.
This was prepared, and staff have seen it, and it shows... I mean, I believe it says that the $1 fee would lead to a subsidy increase of $1.4 million.
Correct.
And it says ridership loss is expected because rail costs and travel times do not compare as favorably with all
the other
data. Page 12 of 49 of the presentation we didn't get because the meeting was canceled last week.
Right.
You canceled the meeting, so we never saw this.
We canceled the meeting. I didn't cancel the meeting.
Doesn't change the evidence.
Yeah, the answer is the same.
Easy one, too. Easy.
Big rock.
Well, as I said, it's Graham. Extremely,
let's go to
it's extremely hazardous for me to propose a way for us to all work together, and I'm trying to get there. And I think we have something
I don't think we're
almost
get
everybody
there
can agree to.
No, we don't have everybody agree.
No, I didn't say everybody. I said almost everybody.
Well,
can
we don't
agree
have
to.
Agreement today. We might have agreement in 2 weeks, but we don't have agreement today.
Do we have agreement?
Can you recap where we are so far?
Okay. In terms of the proposal?
The structure that you're proposing, yes.
Okay. This proposal where I'm trying to find common ground.
Yes, common ground proposal.
Has three pieces. It says we go out to hearing. Okay, and I'll also give you the slight modifications to the thing that people are having problems with. A person is having problems with. The first part of it is that each jurisdiction takes its share of the $29 million subsidy and comes up with a combination of service reductions
or whatever
and subsidy increases that meet its share without impacting negatively any other jurisdiction. Which
means 29?
For your share of the 29.
The full 29, but all of the 29.
It'll total temp 29 when everybody is done.
If you did it, that's done.
Right. The second one, which totals 29, actually totals 35, according to what I thought I heard, is the fair portion. And the proposal so far, keeping in mind the objections associated with that, would be 10 cents across the board on all trips, just increase everything by up to 10 cents, which order of magnitude would generate about 35 million. And there, my best guess, knowing how these numbers work, is every jurisdiction would come very close to having a zero subsidy increase, with the exception of Maryland, who would have a very substantial subsidy increase. So that means most of the rest of you would actually have a lower subsidy than this year. And so that would be another option.
You're putting $60 million out there, basically.
No, then another 30. And that is the use of capital in the operating program, thereby, you know, moving the problem into
for a $30.
Right. Okay. And then that would be the consulting the public on all of these issues. Now, not included in that is any mention of rail service adjustments, and we could, in fact, consider those because most of those don't require public hearing, but you wouldn't get the public input, which otherwise you could. And the other one that isn't considered in there is weekend parking and things like that.
Well, no, it's not just weekend parking. It's parking generally. And so
I said I'd be willing to include any 10 cents on the parking fee.
No, but if we include it's just a proposal, Mr. Benjamin.
We're trying to do across the board 10 cents on everything so we have a consistent one, Mr. Graham.
Are you doing 10 cents on bus?
Yes, 10 cents on bus, 10 cents on rail.
We've had that fight.
Now, Mr. Graham, you know, the rest of the people seem to be willing to do something that will get this out to the public.
That argument is not going to convince me.
Okay. Well, you know.
What will convince me is the merits of the proposal. And the merits of the proposal, let me see if I understand this correctly, is that we're all going to go off and come back with our intra-jurisdiction solutions for our proportionate share of the $29 million. Is that right?
That was a part of a three-part proposal.
That's point one. Am I right?
That's right.
And we'll come back with that in 2 weeks' time.
Correct.
And the second thing is that we will advance the idea of a fare increase, 10 cents across the board, including bus and rail.
Correct.
And Metro Access?
No problem with Metro Access. So, can we legally do Metro Access? No, it's only nickel, isn't it? No, it's 20 cents.
You have to be double.
20 cents on Metro Access would have to be.
So it's 10 cents on rail, 10 cents on bus, and 20 cents on Metro Access.
Could be 10 cents on Metro Access.
Yeah, could be anything that's worth
okay.
Size.
All right.
So it's 10 cents
it's
across.
Up, the wording would have to be up to, so we could do less.
10 cents.
Yes.
10 cents. And for parking fees?
Up to 10 cents.
All week.
Every day that we charge for parking.
Every day that we charge. And the weekend parking?
Every analysis says we shouldn't be charging because it costs too much.
Every analysis except the one that we have in the book.
Mr. Graham,
but it's
you'll
an
have
exercise
2 weeks
that,
to go read it.
Well, there are two things.
All right, so that's fair. That's fair. So you're going to do 2 weeks on that as well, obviously. And then the third thing is to use the proposal regarding the capital
use of
to
capital
to operation.
Money in order to put it in operation.
Question?
Mr. Zimmerman.
Are we then advertising public hearing?
For all of those, the public hearing is to get comments on all of those items.
And we would be advertising that today?
No, it's going to take 2 weeks to get it all together.
So the schedule previously set for hearings is out the window.
Yeah. Absolutely. Well, okay. Absolutely. Mr. McKay.
My principal problem here is we're still going back to the jurisdictions and coming up with cuts and busts. I mean, that's basically what you're telling us. That's one tier. So, because we have no way to know what rail impacts will happen, what fare increases will happen, and so we're going back to our jurisdictions coming up with a virtually exclusive cut to bus services that we're going to put on the table. And then when the public hearings are done and we get ready to adopt the budget, we would scale that back if other things happen, correct. If fare increases happen. But everybody's leaving here. Every jurisdiction is coming back with cuts in bus service to the amount of their share of the $29 million.
Or subsidy increases. Some
or
combination
subsidy
of those
increase.
Two. Correct.
Mr. Benjamin. I just want to be clear, so that Mr. Graham is not the lone ranger standing out there.
Thank you.
I do believe that an increase in fares, whether it's rail or bus, disproportionately affects the riders of the District of Columbia. We'll take a look at that, but I can tell you now, we're going to be hard-pressed to come back with that as part of our recommendation.
Well, what do we think happens with
parking?
I think that's what we do on the far end after we hear from our public. And we would expect the people from the District of Columbia to come back and say exactly that. And that's why we're going out to the public to hear what they have to say. Ms. Hutchins.
Well, I think there's another part of this. The people of the District of Columbia ride rail to all locations. They come to Virginia all the time. So you don't seem to care about those who have to have an increase on their rail service to get to work from the District of Columbia where they live? It seems as though that you see the regional system as a district impact system. I see what we give as a holistic system that serves the entire region. People who live in Virginia come to Washington to work. People who live in the district go to Maryland and Virginia to work. That bus rider or rail rider has to also come. I don't think people see who uses the system. I invite you. It's not just a disparity on one service.
Do we have at least consensus on this? I'm afraid to ask for a vote because I'm not quite sure what a vote would mean. But at least consensus so that we could schedule another meeting of this committee in 2 weeks to take the results of this and, in fact, put together a package for public hearing, and in which I would also encourage all jurisdictions to provide what information they have to Metro staff early so that, in particular, the bus service reductions are vetted enough to make sure that the numbers work. Can I get any sort of indication of where anybody is on this? I hear a yes here, a yes.
Yes.
Are we feeling reasonably comfortable with that without a vote, that this is what we're going to do over the next 2 weeks? And we will have a special meeting of this committee in 2 weeks to potentially go out to public hearing with the package if we can get it put together properly. Again, let me repeat, please use the Metro staff in order to vet any bus numbers that you do to make sure that we really do have numbers at work, to whatever degree you can.
I think for us, and I think I'm speaking for both of us, we would support number one and number three, and we are not prepared to support the fare increase.
Who's supporting anything? We're supporting here.
As being put out for public vote. Am I right?
Yes.
Okay.
And number five, Mr. Grant.
What's number five?
Use the capital funds to transfer it out.
No, that's number three, as I understand.
Oh, okay.
But we will take one and three and reassemble in 2 weeks.
Mr. Lynn.
How do we decide what the public gets an opportunity in the area of transparency and engagement and your effort to make sure that your constituents can weigh in, and then you decide on what it is they get a chance to hear? I mean, that's what we're proposing here, and we're not, it's difficult for me to understand that conceptually, how you would in fact predetermine what people get an opportunity to weigh in.
Well, to respond to that, I think we have two very good solutions.
That's not a response, but I hope you have more than that. But go, keep going.
Well, I appreciate your judgments, Mr. Linton, but I'm going to say my piece here.
I'm glad you appreciate
it. And the point of the matter, the fact of the matter is that we have a solution without raising the specter of a fare increase. We have two very good options. We can go out and we can say, we can look at these intra-jurisdictional responses and reactions, or you can consider this stimulus approach. And I think we're agreed that we cannot support a fare increase proposal being floated.
How do you get the word we have a very good solution with the two when the other majority of the folks felt that we needed to look for three? How does that add up to we?
Well, we haven't heard from every member of this board on that issue. But anyway, we're just speaking for the District of Columbia.
Okay,
and this is the view of the District of Columbia.
Okay, thank you.
Let me summarize.
We are not going to support a fare increase notice.
Okay. I would note, again, Mr. Graham, that's exactly what you criticized me for 2 weeks ago.
This is the way it is.
Almost identical statement.
We're now at the decision-making period.
I think we were then, too. At this point, this is where we are. We have, I think, general agreement on two of the three pieces for public hearing. One is the combination of service reductions and subsidy increases by jurisdiction, not affecting other jurisdictions. And the second one would be the use of capital money for operating with the implications in the out years. We do not have support from the District of Columbia for the second option of a fare increase. And what is the pleasure of this committee as to how we proceed?
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Zimmerman.
I just want to review where we are. We heard earlier that other people needed to put things on the table. Other people have now done so. And I'm trying to figure out what's still on the table. I understand from what I've heard now that we're saying that the majority of the board is prepared to go with what you propose, which would include essentially everything, but that you've already conceded on the idea of a small fare surcharge as an option even to consider, because that's been vetoed.
I haven't conceded on anything. I've summarized where I believe there is overall agreement and the one place where we do not have overall agreement.
Specifically, the one jurisdiction is saying that they will veto that.
I don't believe the word veto got used.
I guess I would put that question.
Why?
Are they saying that you can't go to hearing without that set of proposals?
Can we have a motion?
Sorry, I was saying the Virginia and Maryland delegation.
Can
you just repeat?
And
the chairman had laid out a set of options that included service reductions, capital, and a small surcharge, 10 cents across the board, as an option, which we might then do or not do, or do some portion of, and propose that that go to hearing on that basis. And I'm trying to understand what I heard the District of Columbia saying, because I thought I heard it said that you would oppose and presumably therefore veto going to hearing with that as part of this.
Correct.
Okay, so the District of Columbia has vetoed any consideration of any kind of increment of fares as an option. So that will leave us with present service reduction or future service reduction. And because we've also heard that we don't have any subsidies. So that's what you want to go to hearing with.
We're going to come back in 2 weeks with our proposal to fill our $5 million of this. And so don't anticipate what that might be. Let us decide it. You'll decide it with your colleagues in our office.
Well.
Okay. Ms. Hewlett first.
Well.
And then Ms. Hutchins.
I guess my question is, I was trying to follow up on Mr. Zimmerman's question. He put a question to you at, in terms of, you had three choices there, and you didn't agree with the middle choice, the fare increase. And I just want to make sure I heard you correctly. You did say you would veto that. That's removed from the table? Okay. Because I know you said you'd come back with your proposal.
For our gap closing.
Okay. Ms. Hewlett? I'm sorry, Ms. Hutchins?
Mr. Zimmerman, I thought recapped it, but I think we should be a little clear about how it was what the recap says. I mean, we walked in with a unilateral choice. That's how we walked in the room, and you entertained options, and now we're saying because they're not your options, even though you will not be compelled, I see no compelling reason to do all of what that's part of this mix, but that we consider it. And you've now said to us that those considerations, because you don't agree with them for your choice, are unacceptable to advertise. That ceases to be consensus building in an organization that has a diversity of needs that we all have to address. It's unfortunate that we get there. It is a poor reflection of us saying we genuinely are looking for the overall needs of the organization. We don't all have to have the same needs, but we ought to have them in the hopper. And it seems as though if it's not what you have agreed on, no one else's wishes can be on the table. And sometimes we should just simply vote on it, make it a record, and go on about business of the authority.
Well, you know, just let me just say, you know, you've had things that you will not support. And let me just finish. I've listened to you. And we have things that we will not support. You know, it doesn't contribute to our decision-making process to cast the things that we will not support in the way you've just done it.
May I tell
you? I have been against fare increases as long as I have been a member of this board. And I've been, this is my 11th year. And on one occasion, I voted for them only when buses, and that was the last time, only when buses were held harmless from any increase. And I went along with it. And an agreement that came out of Fairfax County, by the way. So I am remaining consistent to a point of view that I have had throughout, which is that we can find the answers without going to fare increases. And I think this year we already have available to us for public comment the answers that we need. We don't have to add all of the agitation associated with fare increases, particularly as how they impact poor people in the District of Columbia. 25% of the people I represent in Ward 1 live below the federal poverty level. And I am not going to come to this table or any other table and forget those people. And I absolutely think we have a solution. So, Ms. Hutchins, with all due respect, this has been my point of view as a member of this board throughout my entire tenure. And I am once again expressing that point of view, particularly in light of the fact that we have a stimulus approach and we have each of the jurisdictions coming back with their proposals to fill the $29 million. We do not need to put out a fare increase. So,
let me suggest to the committee, in the interest of getting somewhere, that one of the options that the public always has is to suggest options to us. And they can always say, we don't like any of your options. We think we'd rather have a fare increase. Now, the problem with that is...
you dare.
Yeah, the problem with that is, of course, that you can't implement such a fare increase at that point. You know, even if they say that. So to some degree, what we are doing is leaving that completely open to the public in terms of they've got to decide that they want to say something that's outside of the realm of what goes to public hearing. But that certainly hasn't stopped them in the past. I've certainly heard in the many public hearings that I've run, people comment on things well beyond the scope of the public hearing. So perhaps we can all live with going forward with two in the interest of getting something to happen.
Right. Let's do it.
Do I get any?
Where's the rail stuff come in?
Okay. 2 weeks. 2 weeks. We hope
to. The rail stuff, you know, we can consider, here again, it was one of those things where various people had various positions. The proposal that I put on the table was to use the ones for hearing purposes only that had been proposed by staff that were on page 15, all of which I do not support, as a matter of fact, very few of which I support, but for the purposes of that's public hearing, at least have them out there so we can hear what the public has to say.
That wasn't in the 2 points that you mentioned.
No. I was asked a question.
We've got the clarity on the 2 points. Why don't we just move with the 2 points?
Because I was asked a question, Mr. Chair, and I was trying to respond to that question. Right. That option was one that, again, the district did not feel comfortable with, and so it hasn't been carried forward.
Okay, but the implication of that is that, having just heard a speech on how much we're concerned about the bus riders,
exactly,
that we wouldn't want to even put the proposal, we might even think about or consider an extra nickel or dime. Nonetheless, we're going to have a package that will have disproportionately impact bus riders by taking away their service, mm-hmm, because that's what you're going to leave yourself.
We don't know that. The District of Columbia has one of the two largest bus services at stake here.
Yeah.
And you must not assume that we will come back with a reduction in bus service. You must not assume that.
No reduction in rail service, and no reduction in bus service.
We have mezzanines that we can close. There are other things that we can do within the parameters of what we're discussing to come up with our $5 million. Don't assume that.
But you know,
the further clarification, Mr. Chairman, since your framework here had each of us going to come up with a package that adds up to our share of that $29 million, not impacting anybody else. If I had, for instance, in my jurisdiction, a rail station with a mezzanine, you know, entrance I could close.
On weekends.
Whenever. My understanding is that's a regional issue, not a local issue, because that goes to
I would agree with that.
Formula.
I would consider that a
therefore,
regional issue.
Therefore, any savings or costs affect every jurisdiction. So how would I use that to come up with my number?
I think we've tried very, very hard historically to be absolutely certain that we are uniform in what we do in the rail system and that individual jurisdictions don't do adjustments.
It's the way the formula works. I mean, I don't think there's any alternative to that. Whereas bus service, you know, what falls is basically paid for by where it goes.
Right.
The rail service is on a
uniform. Well, one of the options that we noted that is still available to us is we do not have to go to public, really. We don't have to go to public hearing for most of these rail service adjustments.
That's different than
so
I'm
we
asking.
Can discuss them anyway.
What I'm asking is, what I just heard Mr. Graham saying is, he might be using that in his package.
Well,
and I'm not clear on how that works under the framework.
So. Okay, I've just been given some guidance on that. But we may find, for example, duplicative bus routes, you know, where we don't need to. You know, I don't know what we're going to find. Why don't we just come back once we've found it? And put it on the table, and then we'll have a full discussion about it. Why don't we let that be? And I'm going to go back and look at the budget. I'm in a position to influence the budget in the district. Okay.
So you
want to
put it off 2 weeks, basically come back.
That's what the proposal was.
Well,
the
proposal was to have a structure,
weeks.
But what I'm hearing is we cannot get consensus on the full structure, and therefore two of the three elements we will definitely come back with. And the third element is still open for discussion. And rail also, at this point, is open for discussion because it doesn't have to go to public hearing, even though it would be nice to let our public comment on it.
So
where we are?
So what are we doing in 2 weeks' time, and what are we doing today?
I think, yeah, I would agree with Mr. Zimmerman. We've gone as far as we can. What we will do is come back in 2 weeks with, again, each jurisdiction will have its proposal. Mr. Graham, you're the one that asked for this question, please. We will come back in 2 weeks where each jurisdiction will have its proposal for closing the $29 million. We all have our numbers as to what our target is. With a combination of bus service reductions and or subsidy increases where those services should not in any way affect any other jurisdiction detrimentally. If you want to decrease somebody else's subsidy, that's fine, but not their service.
Can we circulate something before we get here so we can have some understanding what each jurisdiction is proposing so we can say that's not affecting my jurisdiction, it's only there? I mean, at least a few days in advance of the meeting.
That, of course, requires that everybody turn something in. I have no problem with that if everybody can get that done. So why don't we encourage everybody to do exactly that?
Okay.
And then may I declare this meeting adjourned? We've got
both bus lines and run all the way to Prince George's County.
It did then 22 or let me remind everybody before I adjourn, we have a board meeting in the other room immediately following this meeting.
Why don't we do that in 2 weeks when we're here anyway?
Well, the N22 is very time sensitive because of the new line beginning. Can we just have a quick board meeting? We had one scheduled. We could do it.
I guess we can indulge the district one more time. Multiple times.
Gentlemen, this meeting is adjourned.